From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde in for Ross Reynolds. If you're a woman who recently quit your job to can wild asparagus that you foraged yourself and you're selling it online, chances are you're part of a trend that Emily Machar is tracking in her new book. She calls it The New Domesticity, and the book is Homeward Bound, Why Women Are Embracing the New Domesticity. Emily Machar, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So what are some of the things that you're reporting on here that, people in their 20s and 30s, especially women, are doing that you're calling the new domesticity?
The trend of, new domesticity is the re-embrace of old-fashioned or lost domestic arts, from canning, from pickling, making cheese, baking bread, all the way through keeping chickens in your yard. It deals with some stuff with parenting, some of the new phenomenons in parenting, like attachment parenting and some of these more intensive kinds of parenting, all the way through to people that are full-on homesteading, people that are trying to live off the grid and grow all their own vegetables.
What's new about the new domesticity?
What's new is that it's become, well, first of all, for lack of a better word, it's become trendy among younger people. It's become cool again. And it has, these days, sometimes a political purpose. People are interested in, you know, doing things for themselves because they don't want to rely so much on corporations, or they want to make their own food because they worry about where their food comes from. So there's often a sense of philosophy or political purpose these days. Some of this really started out in your neck of the woods with the Riot Girls, these feminists of the 90s who got into traditional so-called women's work in a sort of kitschy, ironic way to reclaim it, to say, hey, you know, just because needlepoint has traditionally been woman's work doesn't mean it's not valuable, and we're going to make it kind of cool again, and we're going to do these, you know, interesting, arty, ironic needlepoint works of art, and we're going to knit, and we're going to do stitch and bitch. And I think those were the early days of the revival of crafting, and now we see a really big indie craft movement, but it really started, I think, in the late 90s, in the mid to late 90s.
And so this was in Olympia with bands like Seven Year Bitch and Slater Kenny. And Jean Rayla is a woman that you write about who I hadn't heard of. You call her the godmother of indie crafting. What's her story?
She is. Well, she was someone who was out in Olympia, out on the West Coast, very involved with the Riot Girl movement, and somebody who, up until I think her late 20s, was not at all interested in domestic stuff. She thought it was uncool. She thought it was, you know, not worth her time, not worthwhile. And then she, through the music at the time, through the DIY movement that was happening around the punk music at the time,
do it yourself,
began to say, do it yourself, exactly. She began to see, hey, you know, knitting is DIY, canning jam is DIY, and she wrote a book called Get Crafty and started a website called Get Crafty that sort of initiated a lot of this new indie craft phenomenon.
And yet, this was pretty radical feminist stuff in the Northwest in the early 90s. How did that become a part of what you're calling the new domesticity, and how did it change?
Well, I think what happened was these, you know, so-called radical feminists of the 90s, they brought this stuff back. They said, this is cool. It began to be covered by, you know, some magazines like Bus, that sort of more alternative women's magazines began to cover it and say, hey, this is kind of cool. And the aesthetic spread. And the aesthetic spread far beyond the Pacific Northwest and far beyond people that were involved in the punk scene at the time. And it began to be just generally an aesthetic that people liked. So, you know, when Etsy, the website that where you can sell your handmade crafts online, when that came online in, I think, 2005, people were primed for that. People were primed to think that knitting could be cool again, that cross stitch could be cool, that this handmade look was something that was valuable.
So what does the indie crafts movement look like today with the rise of the new domesticity? And then, you know, also what role did the internet play in that?
Well, I think what's interesting is that you still have a lot of people that are, you know, crafting with the sense of political purpose. You know, they're going to make stuff themselves because they don't want to shop at Walmart and they don't want to give their money to the man. And then you have people that have just sort of taken on this kind of craft aesthetic as something that they think is attractive and pleasing, and they have no politics around it. In fact, I think you can see how big the indie crafting movement has gotten. by looking at, you know, Walmart and Target now have, you know, faux handmade stuff that you can buy that looks like you could buy it on Etsy. And Walmart actually just brought back its sewing section after the sewing section had been gone for a number of years because so many people are becoming interested in this stuff again.
You mentioned the critique of kind of big corporate America when it comes to products and consumerism. Why do you think so many younger women are yearning for this idealized past and turning to things like knitting or raising chickens?
Well, I think young people, young women and men, you know, people who are in their 20s and 30s, they saw their parents work really hard. They saw their parents be pretty stressed out. And they saw, especially with the recession, that work was not necessarily, you know, reliable. It wasn't necessarily the be-all, end-all. You could lose your job at any moment. And maybe they didn't want to give their whole lives to their careers. And I think there's sort of a real reconsidering of what ambition was and what having it all means. And I think a lot of young people began to look for ways that they could balance their lives, that they could spend more time in the home, that they could make their home a nicer place, spend more time with their families. And a lot of these activities, you know, like the crafting, like the food, which were rising for their own reasons, you know, with fears about food safety, with the growing interest in indie crafting. And it all sort of was this perfect storm. And people said, hey, you know, this sort of DIY home-focused life might be a nicer way to live.
Emily Machar is with us. She's talking about her new book, Homeward Bound, Why Women Are Embracing the New Domesticity. And yeah, one of the big trends you write about here is America's distrust of the industrial food system. And of course, this goes beyond, I think, what you're talking about in terms of just the new domesticity, because it's certainly all ages and definitely all genders. How, though, is it connected to the new domesticity, do you think?
Food is a huge part of the new domesticity. I think a lot of people got into the idea of do-it-yourself, the idea of more home-focused living through food. People have become incredibly, incredibly interested and worried with about where their food comes from in the past number of years. There's been a lot more visibility in the media about food scandals, about pink slime and E. coli and all this stuff, and people are more aware than they used to be about the perils that are really inherent in eating and having an industrialized food system and having a food system, period. And so people are going, well, what can I do? Well, I could shop at the farmer's market. Maybe I could go a step beyond that. I could grow my own vegetables. Maybe I could go a step beyond that and, you know, can jam made from the fruit that I grew. So you have all sorts of levels of do-it-yourself kitchen work that I think really feeds into this movement. And that's something that women are interested, that men are interested in, young people especially, but people of all ages, really.
You use a word in this book that I actually hadn't seen before, femivore. What's a femivore?
A femivore, that's a term coined by the writer Peggy Orenstein, who I really admire. She was defined femivore as a woman who uses food and food preparation as a way to live essentially a fairly traditional gendered lifestyle without having to feel like she was Betty Draper, without having to feel like she was a 50s housewife.
On Mad Men. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a woman who, you know, maybe quit her job to stay home with her kids, but she doesn't want to watch soap operas and eat bonbons all day. So instead, she starts a garden and maybe raises some chickens. And since food is considered so important these days, you know, there's a real validation around that kind of work. So she can feel like she's doing work that's valid and creative and, you know, not just being a stay-at-home mom, which, you know, there's so much mommy wars stuff around all that.
Emily Machar is here talking about her new book, Homeward Bound, Why Women Are Embracing the New Domesticity. And on the question of food, you asked the question yourself at one point of whether or not food activist and author Michael Pollan is a sexist pig. And what's the answer to that? Is he a sexist pig?
Well, I pointed out that a number of food writers, and Michael Pollan has been guilty of this in the past, have made some really historically inaccurate assertions about food and women. Pollan has several articles basically suggested that feminism of the 60s and 70s made women believe that cooking was drudge work, and that led to the decline of home cooking, the rise of obesity. And I say that's just historically completely inaccurate. If you look at the record, if you look at women from, you know, from 50 years ago, from 100 years ago, from 200 years ago, they were writing about how hard it was to provide meals for their family, three meals a day, every day, day in and day out. You know, it was drudge work. They were hauling water. They were, you know, baking bread and kneading dough from hand. They were having to kill their own chickens. Women who could afford it would usually farm this work out to servants, or if this was the South, to slaves, because it was so not esteemed and, you know, and not enjoyed. So there were a lot of reasons why women didn't want to have to spend as much time in the kitchen, and certainly not when it was enforced as it was in the 50s. And really the convenience foods that started coming onto the market in the 1940s and 1950s were what, you know, got women out of the kitchen. And it wasn't feminism that told women that cooking was drudge work. They were just recording a problem that already existed.
And what was the perspective on mass-produced foods in the 1950s then?
Well, mass-produced foods, processed foods started really coming onto the market in the 40s after World War II, because companies had developed these technologies for the war. And then after the war, they needed to do something with them, so they tried to sell them to the domestic market. And at first, a lot of women were very suspicious. You know, what is this? Cake in a box? Meat in a can? I don't know. But the food industry really, really, you know, they pushed it. They did all sorts of efforts. They invented Betty Crocker, all these things that happened to help women feel better about these, you know, these new scary processed foods. And, you know, by the 50s, really, women felt like this was the modern way to cook, that this was more healthy, this was more modern, this was more sanitary, and this was the way of the future.
So this was a kind of liberation, at least from the drudgery of housework, for some women.
Well, for women that didn't like to cook, which, you know, plenty of people then as now don't like to cook, didn't like to cook, it certainly shortened their time in the kitchen. Unfortunately, you know, most of these foods aren't particularly healthy. So processed foods are definitely part of the reason why we have this obesity crisis. They're not the entire reason, but they're certainly part of it.
Emily Macher is talking about her new book, Homeward Bound, Why Women Are Embracing the New Domesticity. And you raise this question in your book: why are the children of post-Betty Friedan feminists embracing the domestic tasks that our mothers and grandmothers shrugged off? You lump yourself in with this, so I wanted to ask just about your experience. Why or how much you see yourself embracing the new domesticity?
Well, look, you know, women my age, I'm 30, we grew up with no expectation that we were going to have to be housewives when we grew up. You know, I was raised that I was going to, you know, get an education and a career, which I have. And, you know, so have all of my friends. And I grew up pretty removed from watching anyone have to do housework all day long. And so I think, to me, stuff like cooking seems more like a fun and interesting hobby, you know, and a fun way to spend my time, than it did to my grandmother, who, you know, would have really liked to go to work but wasn't allowed to, because that just wasn't what women did back in the 50s. And since cooking was something she had to do, she felt a lot of resentment about it. But women my age and men go, hey, you know, this is something new. We don't, you know, we didn't know how to do this. This is kind of novel and fun. Let's try it.
And you bring up your grandmother. You actually write about your grandmother at one point where there's an imaginary dialogue between you and her, sort of imagining what she would make of all of this. And what would she make of the new domesticity, do you think?
I think she would be pretty confused. She was someone who did have an education. She went to college and she worked for a little bit, but then she married my grandfather, and he said, you know, he wanted to take care of his wife. He didn't want her to have to work. And it's not like he was some sexist pig. That's just, you know, that's just the way people were at the time. So she didn't work, and she, I think, was fairly bored and not a big fan of cooking, although I hear that she was a good cook when she wanted to be. And then what happened, actually, is that my grandfather died when my mom was 12 and my grandmother was left without a job and with a couple kids to look after, which I think is one of the important cautions that I write about quite a bit in my book, that we can't lose track of the economic bottom line of all this.
Which is what?
Which is, domesticity is lovely, and it's something that everyone, men and women, should embrace if they enjoy it, but not at the cost of, you know, of having a way to make money, or at least a potential way to make money if we need to.
Emily Macher's new book is Homeward Bound, Why Women Are Embracing the New Domesticity. It's a nuanced book. You're not coming out for or against the new domesticity. You're kind of giving us the pros and the cons. And I kind of want to end it there by starting with your conclusions about what the sort of pros of the new domesticity are, and then get to the cons in a minute.
Sure. Well, the pros, and there are so many of them. So much of this is so lovely and so wonderful. And it's really great that people are cooking more, you know, people who like to. Everyone doesn't have to like to cook. I like to, my husband likes to, and that's something that's really satisfying for us, and sort of embracing that and having, you know, farmers markets to shop at is really great. People who are more into handmade stuff, I think that's wonderful. This idea of buy local, of living in a smaller way, that's really great. Living lighter on the earth, the sustainability ideals that are behind a lot of this, like, hey, let's, you know, make our own cleaning supplies out of vinegar because, you know, we don't want to use harsher chemicals. I think that's all coming from such a good place, and I applaud all of that.
What about the cons?
Well, the cons, I think, are that I would hope that as we embrace domesticity, it doesn't become just more of a woman's thing. I want to see men embracing it too. And we're at a place in our history where women are very much encouraged to do most things. Women, you know, can go to the army, women can become scientists, women are going to college in higher numbers than men are. But we still don't allow a lot of space for men to do a lot of domestic stuff. You know, I interviewed a guy in my book who was, he was a quilter. He was actually a famous quilter in the quilting world, which of course is a pretty specific world, so you wouldn't know him outside of that world. And he wouldn't tell people in his office that he was a quilter. He worked at a tech company here in North Carolina, and he was embarrassed because he just didn't want the guys in the office to know that he quilted. And, you know, how sad is that, that we gender these things so much that a man can't admit that he enjoys quilting, which there's no inherent genderedness, there's nothing inherently gendered about quilting except what we put on it. So I would like to make more space for men to embrace this stuff.
And how does that happen?
Well, I think we just need to, you know, slowly see more men doing it, which we do. We need to make, I think, for one, more space in the working world for women to make sure that we have equality there. And I think that'll leave more space for men in the home world. We need to see, you know, larger social changes like paid maternity leave for women, like more flexible workplaces that will keep women in the workplace and, you know, in roles of power when they want to be. And will also allow men flexibility to take care of their kids, to have paternity leave, to go home early when there's something they need to do. I think this is what everyone, men and women, want.
Emily Macher, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Emily Macher's book is Homeward Bound, Why Women Are Embracing the New Domesticity. Today's program was produced by Arwin Nix with Cameron Drews and Hannah Byrne from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm David Hyde.